Jesus heals the official's son. After the 2 days, he left for Galilee. Now Jesus himself had pointed out that a prophet has no honor in his own country. When he arrived in Galilee, the Galileans welcomed him. They had seen all that he had done in Jerusalem at the Passover feast, for they also had been there. Once more he visited Cana in Galilee, where he had turned the water into wine. And there was a certain royal official whose son lay sick at Capernaum. When this man heard that Jesus had arrived in Galilee from Judea, he went to him and begged him to come and heal his son, who was close to death. "Unless you people see miraculous signs and wonders," Jesus told him, "you will never believe." The royal official said, "Sir, come down before my child dies." Jesus replied, "You may go. Your son will live." The man took Jesus at his word and departed. While he was still on the way, his servants met him with the news that his boy was living. When he inquired as to the time when his son got better, they said to him, "The fever left him yesterday at the 7th hour. Then the father realized that this was the exact time at which Jesus had told him, had said to him, "Your son will live." So he and all his household believed. This was the second miraculous sign that Jesus performed, having come from Judea to Galilee. Amen.
We start the second one this morning in the series on miracles of Jesus. This isn't the second miracle. What has happened since last week? Lots of things have happened to you during the last week. Lots of things have happened to me. Some good, some bad, some ongoing. But what happened? It wasn't just a week, all right? Jesus, after the wedding, set off with his disciples and mum, Mary, to Capernaum. And then they stayed there for a few days. A few days after that, they go down to Jerusalem, and it's the Passover feast. Jesus goes into the temple, and he's not happy. He actually makes a whip, drives out all the cattle, sheep, the doves, the pigeons, turns over the money tables, gets really cross of what was happening in God's house. And he said, "What are you doing in my father's house?" And they said, "What do you mean? How can you speak to us in that authority?" And he says, "Because it's my father's house. I tell you what, you tear it down and in 3 days I will rebuild it." And they said, "Don't be daft. It took us 46 years to build this building. 46 years. You're going to do it in 3 days. He didn't mean that. He was talking about himself. Later on, when the 3 days, they were going to destroy Jesus, the temple, and he was going to rise again in 3 days. They have the Passover. There's the teaching of Nicodemus, the rabbi that comes to him at night, and he spends time talking with Nicodemus, and he tells him about he's got to be born again. And he says, "Well, how can I be born again? I can't go and be Maddie again. I can't go back into my mum's womb and be born again." And he explains all of that. After leaving Jerusalem, he goes up into Samaria. What happens in Samaria? He's sitting by Jacob's well. The disciples have gone into the town to buy food, and he's sitting there and he's thinking, "Oh, I'm thirsty." And a Samaritan woman comes along and says, well, doesn't say anything really, because he's a Jew and they don't speak to one another. So he said, "Can I have some water? Can I have a drink? Can you draw me some water?" And she's absolutely shocked. And they actually then start a conversation. And he says, "Look, I can give you water that you won't be thirsty for again. And they enter into this really deep conversation about having the flowing water that Jesus can give. And the disciples come back and they're absolutely horrified. What are you doing? Eat something. And he's going, no, the food that I'm dealing with now is what I've come for. And then they move, well, actually, she goes into Samaria, she goes into the town, and she tells everybody that a man has told them that she's had five husbands. The bloke she's living with now at the present time isn't her husband, right? And tells all about her life story. And she's like, whoa. So she goes back. And they all come out of the town and want, oh, stay a bit. Oh, hang on, stay. And they plead with him to stay and teach. And he starts healing the sick, starts doing miracles. 2 more days he spends there. And then we get to where we are this morning. He leaves Samaria and he sets off and he goes into Galilee. And he's there now actually in Galilee with the disciples. So he's actually done a fair walk. Okay, he hasn't jumped on a number 36. He hasn't got in the latest car. He's actually walked. We know that. We understand that. But there again, we don't, you know. When Andrew said they're going to do 60 miles, what is it, in 30 hours on this trek across the South Downs? I said to him, you're mad. What do you want to do that for? You know, he's a walker. I like to sail, he likes to walk. We're all different. They've got there. Okay, he's coming back and he's coming into Judah and he comes into Canaan. Not that long ago, he's done water into wine. Now, we've got a wedding here next Saturday morning, isn't it? Yeah, Amy Jackson and David are getting married here next week. And Don will be sitting with, you'll be sitting over here doing a registrar bit and signing all of that. Lindsay will be taking service. And yeah. So we heard and dealt with that water into wine last week. So he's actually gone back to where that actually happened. Now, that would have permeated around. But also, they would have heard what went on in the temple in Jerusalem. You don't ransack the temple in Jerusalem without people not knowing about it. Word gets around. And some of those people would have been there. Why do you do that? Didn't understand that. So we get to this morning and he's there. So there's this buzz. And all of a sudden there's this royal member of the royal household. Okay, he was an official. So we can take it he's a fairly wealthy man. He's got position. But his son is really sick. He's dying. So if he's a member of the royal household, it's presumption, okay? Would you have thought he would have access to physicians of the time? He was wealthy. He would have had access to people that would have been able to maybe help his son. But that wasn't actually happening. He was still getting worse. And he hears that Jesus has come into Canaan. Now, he's in Capernaum. So he's at Dartford River Crossing. He's 20 miles away. Okay? So he sets off walking. So he's paid the tolls, walks down the M25, A13, gets through the traffic, you know, the roadworks at Stanford Leo, comes down the new 130, which is nice and quick, isn't it? Gets down, comes down the new road and gets here. Now, I don't know, it doesn't say that he's actually got a faith. It doesn't actually say he's a believer. He knows that Jesus is there, and he knows that Jesus can do something for his son. Because he's heard stuff about Jesus. So he's actually set off walking, right? And his intention is... Right, I've got to go and get this bloke and I've got to get him to come back and actually heal my son. That's the intention he's set off with. That is the predetermined thing in his mind of how he's going to interact and what he's going to ask for. He gets access to Jesus. Okay? He quite easily gets access to Jesus. And he says to him, look, will you come and heal my son? Can you put it up? Where is it? Can you stick it up for us, please, Michael? Where have we got to? What does he actually say? Sir. Right. Okay, here we are, just at the top. He went to him and he begged him to come and heal his son. We would do exactly the same thing, wouldn't we? Unequivocally. We would do it. We do that. He's close to death. And what does Jesus turn around and say? Oh, not again. I was just going to sit down and have a nice sort of relax, put my feet up, read the paper, have a rest, and I've got to go out and work again. He gives quite a strong answer here, doesn't he? Unless you people see miraculous signs and wonders, and Jesus told him, you will never believe. You see, since Jerusalem, he's actually done a lot. In Samaria, a lot of people actually brought the sick to him. He didn't complain. He just healed them. He dealt with them. He didn't say, oh, go away. Oh, I'm not going to answer the doorbell. I'll let the phone ring. I'll put the answer phone on. No, he actually dealt with them. But he's actually saying here, people only believe when they actually see stuff happen. And we're exactly the self-same sometimes, aren't we? We see things happen and we start believing. Or stuff doesn't happen, or requests don't happen, and we start losing our faith a bit, and we start getting... But he says, hang on. Jesus told him, the royal official, he then questions him again. Sir, come down before my child dies. Still in the official's mind, the only way his son is going to get healed if Jesus travels those 20 miles and actually comes alongside him and comes into the house and touches his son. That is the only way in his mind that he sees it's actually going to happen. Jesus replied, you may go. Oh, hang on. This has changed his preconceived idea round. Completely. You may go. Your son will live. When God tells us something, how do we react? When we ask Jesus for something, when we interact and we go to him with petition, the man took Jesus at his word and departed. Didn't question it, didn't say, oh, hang on, unless you actually come, he ain't going to live. Because that's what he set off with. And Jesus has turned it round and gone, you may go, your son will live. And the guy's gone, okay, and has set off. So he set off for Dartford again. He set off for the crossing again. He hasn't just popped round the corner. He hasn't just gone to Asda. He's set off on another day's walk. Now, what do you do when you're walking for a whole day thinking, hang on, or when you get an answer and God answers you, right? and you haven't yet seen it, do you? Well, did he say that to me? Will it actually happen? Hang on, I better go back and ask him again. Can you tell me that again? Can you give me another sign? We do it, don't we? I do it. As much as I'm sharing this with you, I'm sharing this with me. So don't think I get it right. I don't get it right all the time. But the man took Jesus at his word and departed. While he was still on the way, his servant met him, and the news that the boy was living. I don't know. I don't know if he got to Stamford the Hope or whether he got to actually the crossing. But the servants come out because they were really excited. The boy had recovered. They knew that the master had gone to see Jesus. They knew he was desperate. And they knew something was going to happen. The boy was either going to live or die. Can you scroll on for us, please, Michael? Okay, then we get a what time, then they interact, then they realise. Now, what did Jesus actually say back at the other bit? He said, you only believe when you actually see these miraculous signs and wonders. But I would say this guy started believing the moment Jesus spoke to him and actually said, you go. Your son will live. You go. I'm interacting with you. And he said it in such a way that he took him at his word. And he's walked. Then the father realised the exact time. Right, your son will live. So he and his household believed. I don't know if they met Jesus again. I don't know whether word got back. Jesus knew that the son was going to be all right. What did the disciples make of that? How did they grasp hold of that? How did the other people? You see, so often we go to God and we say, we want you to do this. Will you do this for me? I need help like this, and I want that answer. And we limit God by saying, almost, we want to be in control. I want to interact with you on the terms that I do it with. Not how God wants to do it. Do we grasp it? To say, you're in control of my life. I believe in you. I give my life to you. You run it. We know the best things happen when we're in step with God. We know that. But so often, we fall back into the natural and go, I want you to do it this way, and only that way. And this morning, it's about reminding that God is in control. God is in control. God is in control of us individually. God is in control of us corporately. We've seen that as a fellowship. We know that as a fellowship. We've seen when we know when we seek God, and we seek God in his earnestness to have your way, God, we see things come together. We've seen that with the coming of Lindsay. when we were choosing a minister. We say, we want who you wanted, God. And when Lindsay was looking for a church, I want to go where you want me to go, God. And God brings the two together. There'll be lots of instances if we start saying this morning to each one of you, where has God interacted in your life? And you know where those instances are. Well, you've gone, okay, God, you're in control. Keep doing it that way. Don't think that you can pick up the controller and you can say to God, I can do it like that. And don't think you can pick up the skybox and you can go, I'm not quite sure and I don't like what you're saying there, God, I'm going to change channels. Because the other channel won't be any good.